Welcome to the second dsmith.org podcast on high-frequency measurement, troubleshooting, and design. I'm Doug Smith. In this episode, I'll interview Eddie Pavlou, the CEO of Elliott Labs, on trends in EMC testing over the coming year and how it will affect equipment manufacturers. Elliott Labs has a long and distinguished presence in Silicon Valley and presently has locations in Sunnyvale and Fremont, California. So I'm here at Elliott Laboratories on a nice sunny day in San Jose, California. And we're going to talk about EMC testing. Eddie is the CEO of Elliott Laboratories in Sunnyvale, California. It's one of the premier test labs here in the Valley, and they've been around a long time. And I've had quite a history here with Eddie. I think when I was still working at Bell Labs back in the early 90s, I came out here and did a few seminars with Elliott. I don't think you were here then, but you were a customer of here then.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't here at the time, but I was a customer when I was working at another manufacturer. And that's right, you did come out, you did some seminars, and I came over and I actually visited you several times when you were at Bell Labs.
Okay, and then I took an early retirement from the labs and moved out here in 96 and worked at Auspex Systems as manager of their EMC group for 4 years, and we were a customer of Elliott at that point. And had lots of interaction with the Elliott staff at that, during those years. And then I became an independent consultant, went on my own. And now I still work with Elliott a fair amount. Occasionally I help their clients with sticky problems. And so I thought I'd come over here and talk to you today, Eddie, about what do you think the trends are in electromagnetic compatibility testing and how that'll affect your customers in the coming year.
Sure. Well, I think there's several trends that are probably worth talking about. One of the things that we're seeing at Elliott is that global approvals is becoming more and more of an optimization requirement for writing test plans and protocols. I think a good example of that is that as more areas in the world are adapting formalized requirements, it's really the requirement of the lab to put together a test plan that basically overlays all of these different testing requirements to basically minimize the amount of testing that you're doing.
And these requirements, there's quite a few of them. I've often wondered how people who make small products get all those stickers on them, like a little MP3 player that's the size of your thumb. I mean, how do they get all the stickers on those things?
Yeah, there certainly is a lot of requirements. And, you know, when you optimize these protocols and these test plans, sometimes it's relatively simple because you may have requirements that are very similar, but maybe the levels are just a little bit different. But in other cases, there might be complete configuration changes that you need to do to the setup. So you really need to know the standards in and out to be able to minimize the amount of testing that you're doing.
I remember when I was with Auspex Systems, one of the problems we had with testing was it was a big complicated system that you couldn't just turn off if you're wondering whether it was your emission or not. And it was like an hour to reboot the system. And so it took us also almost a day to set up. We had to buy a day's worth of time without even doing a test just to set up. And I've always admired the people who had little plastic products that come and just sit on the table and have it done.
Yeah, that's great when you have a small product that you basically can ship and you basically turn it on and it works. Yeah, I think that I remember Auspex equipment, and I could see how you'd be envious of being able to do that.
So what kind of specific requirements do customers have, Eddie?
That's a real good question, Doug. That's another trend that we've been seeing, and that is that customers are coming in with more sophisticated protocols. And what I mean by that is, a good example would probably be some of the medical companies that we work with. They come in with very complicated testing protocols because they're basically taking the regulatory compliance requirements and overlaying on top of those their quality-related requirements. So you wind up doing this whole suite of testing that is really beyond the scope of just regulatory compliance, but also covers quality assurance as well.
Okay. So one of the things, regulatory compliance seems to be getting more complicated. What do you see along those lines, Eddie?
Well, Doug, that's definitely true. I see the trend continuing for manufacturers of products to have more regulatory compliance experience. The global market's becoming more and more mature with regard to these compliance requirements. And the other thing is that clock speeds are continuing to get faster and faster. And as that happens, what was once just an EMC requirement now is really more of a functionality requirement. In other words, if you're not the impact of not passing an EMC requirement is often that your product is often not functioning properly as well.
I've noticed that a lot. I've had many cases in my career where the EMC problem, the EMC test, I should say, turned out to be the final test before release of the product, and we ended up finding something that would have been a disaster in the field. Okay, products these days, Eddie, are getting quite complicated, and how do you determine what test to apply? Where's the judgment come in?
Yeah, that's a real interesting question, Doug, because we're seeing more and more innovative products that really require an interpretation of the standards. Often these products are coming ahead of the standards development, and the manufacturers are really depending on the expertise of labs like Elliott to be able to interpret these requirements. And this goes not just for EMC, but it affects product safety, telecom, global approvals. It's really across the board with these new innovative products.
So along a new line here, Eddie, do you see any new requirements or tests coming down the pike?
Yeah, actually we do. We see a couple of them. I think a good example of that would probably be dynamic frequency selection testing, DFS testing. This is a new FCC requirement for the 5 gigahertz band, so it impacts things like 802.11a. And it's really intended for the frequency spectrum that's shared with the DoD, the Department of Defense radar. Basically, the requirement is that these systems that are operating in these bands, these products that are operating in these bands, need to be able to detect simulated radar, often called chirping, and then be able to move and listen to see if they can move to another channel. So it's currently required for some of the bands within this 5 gigahertz band, but it's soon to spread over to more bands as well.
Okay. What would be an example of a product that would need to conform to this?
Well, a good example of a product is going to be anything that's operating in this 5 gigahertz band. And that, for example, the Wi-Fi, the 802.11a products operate in that band. And it's really a very sophisticated test that needs to be performed. We've gone and purchased a performance signal general generator that's optimized for this DFS algorithms. DFS is actually a test that's been around for quite a while, but this is a lot different than the existing tests that they have. In Europe, for example, they have three fixed radar types, and it's nowhere near as random as the DFS testing that's going to be required for the FCC. And it appears as though the European Union is going to adopt a standard like this as well.
Eddie, I've heard that there's some new requirements coming down the pike about restriction of hazardous substances in electronic products. Can you tell me something about that?
Actually, there's two things that are coming out, and you're right, they are coming very quickly. They're going into effect July 1st of this year, July of 2006, and there's two of them. One is referred to as ROS, which is the restriction of certain hazardous substances. The other one is referred to as WEE, which is basically waste electrical and electronic equipment. Talking specifically about the ROS requirement, there's different substances that they're trying to limit or completely restrict the amount of levels, things like lead and cadmium. What's real interesting about this standard, because it's fairly new, is that many manufacturers are relying on their suppliers. And basically the requirement is that companies need to do due diligence by validating the information from their suppliers. And right now the most common way to do that is to request a certificate of compliance from their suppliers. But there's really a big question about whether or not these certificates are going to be enough to satisfy due diligence. In other words, can they really just take the word of their suppliers? And I think that there's going to be a significant level of testing required for this.
Eddie, suppose I'm a manufacturer. I've got my certificate of compliance for this ROHS thing. And ultimately, it turns out I don't comply. The certificate wasn't warranted. Who carries the ball here? Am I responsible as a manufacturer?
Yeah, absolutely. The manufacturer is responsible. That's why they're required to do the due diligence on this. So the ball, the buck stops with the manufacturer,
as opposed to the supplier.
Exactly. I mean, the manufacturer could go back to their supplier, but basically, when the authorities are following up on this, they're going after the manufacturer of the product. They're not going to want to hear excuses about what the supplier told them.
Okay. And what kind of tests are involved?
Well, If you're going to rely completely on these certificates of compliance from your suppliers, I think at a minimum you should be taking samples of the types of components that you're shipping and perform testing on them to see what levels of these hazardous substances are actually there. In other words, you might get a certificate of compliance from one of your suppliers that says that lead is not being used in this particular component. But you really don't know unless you test it. And I'm not suggesting that every piece be tested, but I think that at least while this is a new standard, that you do some lot testing just to see if the information you're getting from your supplier is accurate.
Okay, and it sounds like this testing, at least in some parts of it, may be destructive, so you need to plan on having an extra circuit board component or something around that you don't need.
Sure, that's correct. Some of the tests that are done don't have to be destructive, but to get the more accurate measurements, often it is a destructive test for the particular component.
And one last topic, Eddie, in case people are interested in some of these things and would like to visit the Elliott website, what's your website address?
Our website address is elliottlabs.com, ELLIOTTLABS.com.
Okay, and one other last thing. Jobs are always a concern in the engineering community these days, and I know that your lab, as well as others, from time to time have positions that open. If someone were interested in working here, how would they find out if there's a position open?
Well, we post all of our open positions on our website, and you can also send an email to our general mailbox, which would be info@elliottlabs.com, and that would be forwarded on to our HR department.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Eddie, for this interview.
Thanks, Doug.
Well, thanks for listening. The next dsmith.org podcast will be posted later this month. Please feel free to email me at doug@dsmith.org with suggestions for this podcast, or if you'd like to participate in an interview. Again, thanks for listening.